Hello and welcome to Straight Talk. I'm Tim Gordon. In a little over 2 weeks, voters across Washington will select the top two candidates they want to represent them in this November's general election. One key race right here in our own backyard is drawing national attention and shaping up to be one of the most competitive House races this year. Washington's 3rd Congressional District covers much of Southwest Washington, stretching from the Gifford Pinchot National Forest to the coast. The historically purple district encompasses Pacific, Lewis, Wakayakum, Cowlitz, Skamania, and Clark counties. It's currently represented by Democrat Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, but the incumbent candidate faces opposition both from Republicans and from within her own party. Joining us virtually today to discuss the upcoming primary race and make her case to voters is Representative Marie Glusenkamp-Perez. And as we mentioned, Glusenkamp-Perez is the incumbent in the race, having served two terms in the House since first being elected in 2022. Prior to jumping into politics, she co-owned and operated an auto repair and machine shop with her husband, something they still own today. Representative Glusenkamp-Perez, thanks so much for joining us from D.C. today. We appreciate it.
Glad to be
here. Yeah, well, listen, for people who may only know you from your name, your campaign signs, TV commercials, tell us really who you are, why you're running, and what you want voters to know first.
Well, I did not come to this because I'm a deeply partisan person or anything. I was running a small business. My husband and I own an auto repair and a machine shop. I live in rural Skamania County, and I've got a four-year-old son. And feeling like our issues aren't a priority for D.C. and you know, like establishment politicians, and feeling like issues were never top of the agenda, and finding a path to really to say, like, we've got to do something about the affordability crisis and the lack of agency and the erosion of power of ordinary people in our everyday lives.
Well, tell us why you're the best person to represent Southwest Washington over the next 2 years. You're the incumbent, you want to return.
Well, I think in the past 3.5 years that I've been here, I've demonstrated a real diligence and attention for the ordinary things and an effectiveness to make sure that our issues are top and center of the agenda. That, you know, I actually just passed a bill on housing affordability. So not using federal dollars as a band-aid for the affordability crisis, but as a leverage to say that ordinary people need to have a cleaner, more manageable zoning and permitting process to build more housing, not just focusing on affordable housing for those who are struggling the most, not you know, just talking about tax cuts for the biggest players, but what it's like to be an ordinary American. In the same way that I'm skeptical of, you know, big government, I'm also skeptical of and unafraid to criticize the big market players. I led on the carried interest tax loophole and introducing a bill that says that, look, my labor as somebody working in the trades shouldn't be taxed higher than somebody who is buying up tons of housing and earning passive income off of that, that we want a level playing field for our tax system. A real attention to not just, you know, the kinds of subsidies and things that are often predicated on who's in power in Congress, but that we actually have agency and power in our ordinary lives, shop class in junior high, making sure that we have good trades education in school, defending secure rural schools funding, you know, funding for our shop programs and our teachers, making sure that we are supporting all the things that it takes to become somebody with agency and power to start a small business, to be able to be real agents in our lives, you know, and on the government side, you know, being able to pass the banana bill, which was starting to attack some of the regulations that make it so expensive to have childcare in this country, and trying to clear out some of the unintended consequences of legislation that made it really difficult to peel bananas, and making sure that it's more of the money that we pay for childcare is going to people who are actually changing diapers and doing the work, not the regulatory compliance industry.
Well, you well know your race is a key one in a swing district. Washington's 3rd voted for Donald Trump while also putting you in office. How do you balance representing your Democratic base so while also appealing to independents and Republicans who helped decide recent elections, including yours?
You know, I really believe in a place-based politics and that we all show up with a real deep loyalty to our districts above and beyond a partisan litmus test that we are, we get better federal policy, we get more honest policy, and it's one of the best ways to attack some of the corruption and erosion of efficiency and effectiveness that we've seen in government. Like I said, I didn't come to this as a deeply partisan person, but I'm a Democrat. And the way that those values show up is a real, for me, it's a real attention to protecting our way of life in Washington state, our right to vote by mail, our belief that you ought to be able to have a job in the woods, that you ought to be able to own a small business, that you ought to have real self-determination and a commitment to our public education. Those are not deeply partisan things, but I've demonstrated a real effectiveness in those things. And I think it's because I work so hard to represent my whole district, not just a partisan ideology, but the whole district as a whole.
It is very, very much a varied district. Let's talk about the economy now. What's the biggest thing Congress could realistically do over the next 2 years to make life more affordable for families here? It's so important. And how would you help make that happen?
Well, one of the bills I've introduced, fair prices for local businesses. We have seen the federal government fail to enforce the Robertson-Patman rules that say that big suppliers can't charge small businesses a higher fee for their goods than the big box stores, kind of self-dealing that we've seen. So introducing just a level playing field for people so we have more agency, we have more small businesses. Like, I believe in the competition. And it's, like the right to repair, the ability to fix your own stuff, and the ability to make things, to make houses, to have a real strong public infrastructure. One of the big focuses I've had is really protecting our public water systems. I brought home a lot of money for our PUDs, and that's not like glamorous work, right? It's not like naming a dog park after yourself or something, but it's about protecting ratepayers and making sure that we're good stewards of the infrastructure we already have in place that we rely on, and making sure that we can keep rates from going down. It's all of the ways that feels like a good life is sort of getting away from us. The reality is now most of us feel like we either have three jobs or you got three houses. And that loss of the middle of the economy is a real crisis, I think, for democracy. And that's why it's been a focus for me in Congress to make sure that we are doing that work and that our federal tax dollars are spent efficiently and effectively, making sure that costs don't go up, doing what we can to have fair competition and a level playing field. So much of what we see is just it's easy to ignore, right? Like the I-5 bridge. I was able to get the almost over $2 billion back for the I-5 bridge project, and also make sure that the Coast Guard didn't mandate a movable lift span, which would have added at least $2 billion to the cost of construction. And that is all money that we are making sure bring down the cost, that those aren't things that come out of tolling, that we are being good stewards of our money.
A technical issue caused the last few questions of our interview with Congresswoman Glusenkamp Perez to be cut off from our initial recording. We apologize for that. And to make sure she had the opportunity to answer those questions on the record with us, we reached back out requesting an opportunity to re-record her answers. Congresswoman Glusenkamp Perez graciously made time in her schedule to join us again here. And Congresswoman, we really appreciate you being here.
Thing. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get right to it and back to the question of immigration now. And most voters seem to want both stronger border security and a functioning immigration system. You've got a voting record here that many Democrats don't like, including voting with Republicans to give ICE more money, $10 billion, with no reforms. The question, where do you draw the line between immigration enforcement and due process?
Yeah, Tim, I think your question illustrates a really common misconception. Actually, the bill that I voted for included body cameras, and both of the last killings that we saw in Houston and Maine, there were no body cameras being worn. And so this was a really substantive reform. In the last year, the big, beautiful bill included funding for ICE at like 6 years of pre-funding ICE. And one of the most important authorities Congress has is oversight funding. And without that additional funding bill, we would not have gotten body cameras, and we actually didn't. As we can see now, to terrible consequences. And so I think what we want is absolutely, as you said, stronger borders. We want an immigration system that is functioning. And that includes these reforms that, you know, it's been a frustration of mine. In the DHS bills I voted for subsequently, there were body cameras, there was officer ID, there was an end to sensitive enforcement at sensitive locations like churches, schools, courtrooms. There was an end to the surge. There was really significant reform that didn't happen. And that's a point of frustration because in the immigrant community I come from, it's not just about messaging, it's about what actually works to deliver a secure border and an immigration system and enforcement that is abiding by the law.
Right, a lot going on there, and I appreciate your response to the question. But you have broken with Democratic leadership on several high-profile votes. How do you decide when to stand with your party and when to oppose it?
You know, it's really not about opposing my party. It's about standing in the district. It's about representing what is a really independent district and reflecting our values through that. And so, you know, I'm very careful to talk to partisan and nonpartisan committee staff to speak with my local communities. I've been so appreciative of the people that, you know, answer the call when I have a question about how this rule on SNAP is going to impact them. And that's been a really huge asset to me. So it's really not about opposing my party. It's about standing for my district.
I hear you. Well, look, we have about 2 minutes left. Tell us, if you're reelected, what would success look like 2 years from now?
You know, we want a country where we have agency. I think, you know, we want to be able to make and do and build things. We want to lower taxes for working people. We want to make sure that there's a regulatory environment where you can start a small business and be successful. It's about a return to that deliberative democracy where we see each other and talk to each other and we know our neighbors and we have time to think about policy and how we can influence to build the life that we want.
Yeah, we've got a little more time, so I'm going to just ask you another. I mean, you've really been someone who's put out an independent voice at times. And what's your philosophy around that and in the work you're doing?
Yeah, we're an independent district. You know, this is actually the only seat that's voted for Donald Trump in the last three elections that's held by a Democrat. And for me, you know, I feel like so much of the political agenda has very little to do with the actual lived experience of families like mine, where we're trying to run a really small business in the trades, where we're trying to, you know, find a spot in daycare, where we're trying to become homeowners. And I think we have a lot of lawyers and doctors and, you know, multimillionaires in Congress. And I think we need more representation of people who have, you know, worked for a living and done that.
Yep. Well, listen, we have another 20 seconds for you. What's your final message to voters here on this show?
You know, it has been a privilege of a lifetime to be able to be in this work. This is not something that I expected to be able to do in my life. It wasn't on my list of things to do, and it's been a profound honor. And I'm very grateful to everyone who has been so generous with their insight and reaching out. You know, it is all the casework that people have brought me. It's a real privilege and an honor, and I would really love to keep doing this work.
Right. Well, Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, running for a third term, thanks so much again for your time today. We're going to take a quick break here on Straight Talk. And when we come back, we'll hear from Representative Glusenkamp-Perez's leading challenger within the Democratic Party, Brent Henrich. Stay with us. Welcome back. Washington uses a top two primary system, meaning all candidates are on the same ballot, and the two with the most votes, regardless of party, advance to the general election. And so for incumbent Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, the challenge to her seat is coming from both sides of the aisle. Brent Henrich is one of them, and he's running as a Democrat. Before entering politics, Henrich spent years in the cinema industry, including as an executive with Cinetopia and later working on Dolby Cinema projects around the world. And Brent Henrich, thanks so much for joining us here on Straight Talk right now.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Well, look, for people who may only know you from maybe your campaign signs or ads, tell us who you are, why you're running, and what you want voters to know first.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a father, a husband. We've got three living children. We had one daughter that was born and passed in the same day in 2012, which really reaffirmed my views on reproductive rights and where they are today and the instability there really drives me. Beyond that, you know, I'm a concerned citizen. I want to make sure that people are able to do better and to live a comfortable and healthy life, you know, here in the Northwest, where we're blessed with so much, but, you know, we also have things that we need to work on.
For sure. And our condolences on the loss of your child. I'm glad you have three other healthy children.
Yes, we have three precocious other ones to still wrestle.
Well, that's a joy for sure. Why are you the best person to represent Southwest Washington over the next 2 years?
I'm an average person. I'm what the founders, you know, expected. Having somebody stand up and say, I want to go in and do the civil work. I never was able to do that in any other capacity in my past, but right now where I was at in my career, just overall, I felt that it was the right time that I could step forward to help my neighbors and do better for this country. Right now, we're under attack from within, and we need people that are going to stand up to that.
In 2022, you ran in the primary, but then withdrew. You tell me to kind of get the party behind one candidate. What's different this year for you?
Well, the math is different. In 2022, I withdrew. The math was showing totally different. And when I started that run, I said Jamie Herrera Butler needed to be replaced. And I stepped out, unified Democrats behind Marie, and we were successful in replacing Jamie. I just don't believe that we got the change that we were looking for and that the voters voted for. And so I've stepped in to be able to still fight for the same causes I always have: healthcare, education, and infrastructure.
Yep, you're in it now. Well, this race is a key one in a swing district. Certainly Washington's third has voted for Donald Trump, while also putting a Democrat in its congressional seat the last couple terms, as someone who's running as a more progressive candidate, really. How would you balance representing the Democratic base while also appealing to these independents and Republicans who really helped decide recent elections?
Like I said, I'm running on healthcare, education, and infrastructure that's going to create jobs. These are dinner table issues. These are affordability issues for everybody. Healthcare has become, for so many families, the second largest cost every month after shelter. That's not acceptable. We need to be bringing those prices down and doing the work in D.C. To hold the private healthcare industry accountable. I'm running on issues that I think affect the entire district, and that at the end of the day, I'm running on honesty and accountability, and that what I say I'm doing now is what I'm going to do in D.C., and that if I don't, I really hope somebody like myself steps up to challenge me to hold me accountable.
If you are successful, then if you were in Congress, how would you strike that balance then to be able to get things done, to appeal to the entire district, and break from your party if you had to? I don't know. Is that possible?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of places where I know I would possibly be breaking from the party. Even while I've been endorsed by environmental groups, I believe in sustainable logging. I've got a long history with very close family friends that were in the lumber industry. I've been around it my entire life. There's things we can do in sustainable forestry that'll reduce wildfire risks and the like, and we can get mills going again. I want to make sure that when you're driving up I-5 past Kalama, looking at piles and piles of round logs that are about to be put on barges and sent out of the country, that we stop doing that, that we're milling that to dimensional here, and then it can be exported if that's where it's going. But we need to create the jobs here in the district.
Yeah, there's some things that maybe aren't partisan that you feel that are just the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, and again, healthcare. Everyone needs healthcare. And so nobody wants the private for-profit industry just making ungodly amounts of money and deciding our futures just based on their bottom line instead of what's right for us.
All right, let's talk about the economy now. It's a tough time for a lot of people out there. What's the biggest thing Congress could realistically do over the next 2 years to make life more affordable for people in Southwest Washington? What would you do to help make that happen?
Well, I'm advocating to make sure that we're taxing the rich and that we're taxing corporations and lifting the burden off the working class. It's going to be a heavy lift with the current executive administration, but at the end of the day, I believe we can do it. I believe we're going to be able to get control of the House. I feel very positive about control in the Senate. And that going forward, you know, that we can stroke his ego a little bit and be able to get some good things passed.
What's your perspective on where things stand right now, where we're at?
Well, right now, with single party control in the federal government, it hasn't been good. But just this week, you know, they did pass the Homes Act, which, you know, is helping people. Mm-hmm. And Trump just refused to sign it, but it became law anyways. So we know that some things can come out of that. We can get bipartisan legislation through. I think there's a lot of places to work with the other side. I just don't think that randomly siding with the Republicans right now on things that are enabling ICE and such are things that to hang my hat on is just, oh, it was bipartisan.
Yeah. Let's talk about housing a little bit more and housing affordability. It is still really expensive in all over the place in Southwest Washington as well in terms of housing and home ownership and rents and everything. What's one federal action that you believe, I know we just had that Housing Act did pass. Mm-hmm. What else needs to happen to get it to even really where it needs to be, what needs to happen?
Well, right now, one of the largest costs that people don't even think about when building a house is the cost of permitting. I want to make sure that maybe we can get a government program. Well, those permit fees are necessary because that's what funds our cities and our counties. They can't go without those fees. That we can do something in the affordable housing sector where the federal government can refund those permitting fees to the builder if that actually sells in an affordable way. We can do a lot of things at the federal level. I want to make sure that our federal lending guidelines, we have people that are able to pay their rent every month, that want to buy a house that has a mortgage payment of $200 a month less than they're paying in rent.
Right. Yeah.
But they're being told no, the debt to income. These people have successfully been living and paying for rent. That should not be a hurdle for them.
We're talking about immigration now. Most voters seem to both want a stronger border, but also a functioning immigration system. What's your take on what's been happening and what specifically would you work to change if elected?
Well, overall in immigration, we have a broken immigration system that is going to take years to fix. But right now, I know that what ICE is doing and the budget that they've been allocated is not working. We need to dismantle ICE. We need to take that budget and we need to move that to the immigration courts. We have millions of people here that ICE are saying are illegal and that they're chasing after and that we're seeing these tragedies on the nightly news. When those people are simply undocumented because they have not been processed through the court system, we need to get the judges and the clerks and the like so that these cases can be processed so that they're not in a limbo undocumented state. They would then be documented. We're spending money on the wrong side of the problem.
We have just a couple minutes left, and my final question, so you have a couple minutes to answer it, is if you're elected, what does success look like to you, say, 2 years from now?
Success looks to me like the people that voted for me saying you followed through and saying that loudly and proudly to new people when I'm running for re-election. It's he said he was going to do these things. He's been accountable. He's shown up. It's continuing to show up for these groups because all too often people get elected and then their priorities change. I make it a point that on my website has the cell phone number directly to me. And while that probably will have to change after being elected, right now I want to make sure people can reach out and touch me. And going forward, I'm going to do that to the best of my ability.
Is it a challenge running as a more progressive Democrat in this district?
I don't know. I just think I'm running as authentically who I am. And I find that to be a comfortable space to go forward in. I, you know, got caught in some big fish tails when I was 13 and 14 years old and figured out all of a sudden it's easier to just be straightforward. And if the fish was only a foot long, that's how big it was, but I caught the fish.
Well, that's a great analogy. I like it very much. And you've been very straightforward here in our conversation. I really appreciate you coming in and visiting with us.
I appreciate you.
This is Brett Henrich, and candidate for District 3 for Congress in Southwest Washington. Thanks again.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining us. Be sure to come back next week when we sit down with Republican candidate for Washington's 3rd Congressional District, John Braun. And a reminder, you can stream Straight Talk on your own schedule. Download the free TV app, KGW Plus, available now on Roku, Apple TV, and Fire TV. We'll see you back here next week on Straight Talk.